If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast. I'm Matt Velasquez, and I'm joined by Charles Gardner. And we're less than 24 hours removed from the opening game of the Bucks season. And there's no practice today. There's no game again until Saturday. So what better time to have a podcast to break down the first game, to kind of look ahead to the rest of the season than right now. Right, Charles?
Absolutely. That's right, Matt. I think we can make a dive into the opener and what we saw that was good, bad, and ugly, and there was some of all of that. Agreed?
Oh, definitely. And for those of you who, you know, follow the podcast but somehow don't know what happened in the game, it was a 107-96 loss to the Charlotte Hornets. The Bucks were kind of out of it pretty early in the game. Charlotte built up a double-digit lead that they maintained for most of the night, ballooned as high as 24 in the third quarter, and then the Bucks made it respectable at the end. You know, so Charles, in a game like that where the Bucks really weren't close for much of it, what stood out to you just as your biggest takeaway?
Well, I just think, I know some Bucks fans were quite disappointed, and certainly there were some boos last night.
Oh, yeah.
For a long time, they just couldn't get any traction in the game, Matt. They just couldn't even make a decent run. They got down by as many as 24. They were down, I believe it was 15 at halftime. And one of the plays that stuck out to me, I even mentioned it to Jason Kidd in the post game, was the shot by Kemba Walker coming right out of the halftime. The first possession, I believe, for the Hornets in the third quarter, and nobody went to guard him, and he was just dribbling the ball up top of the three-point area, and he thought, well, oh, nobody's going to guard me. I'll just take this three, and boom, it was an 18-point lead just like that on the first play of the second half. So I think that's really hard to come back from. They made a little run with a group with Beasley and Brogdon playing well in the fourth quarter, but you just knew that it was going to take some incredible comeback for them to even really get back in the game, and that did not happen. So disappointing. The one thing to remember, I think you and I talked about last night, Charlotte was a playoff team. They're well coached. They got Michael Kidd-Gilchrist back. I saw something that said the Bucks had a 28% chance to win the opener, and that might have been about right.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, and yeah, like you said, you know, we were talking about this last night after the game, because obviously both of us have people who follow us on Twitter who are big Bucks fans, and you know, that's awesome. But some people kind of look at that one game and go, "What's going on? This is ridiculous. This season's terrible. How bad is this team? They haven't improved on anything." Blah 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 blah. But you know, two teams are playing in that game, and one of those teams, you know, is a coming off a playoff season in which they, you know, played really well in the playoffs in that series against Miami. And, you know, they brought back, you know, the bulk of their team, you know, if not the whole team, really. I mean, but especially with getting Kidd-Gilchrist back, you know, and they've got a coach who is very well respected, one of the top coaches in the NBA, in Steve Clifford. He's a very defensive-minded guy. You could tell just by watching them play, you know, how well they play defense and how, you know, locked in they are and how they, you know, took a lot of things away from the Bucks. You know, and that said, you know, the Bucks missed some shots, which was something that they had done in the past, and maybe we didn't expect them to do as much this season. You know, Mirza Teletovic going 0-for-5 from 3, it's not going to happen every night. You know, that's just...
Well, they better hope not.
No.
I'll tell you what, certainly he was brought into to take some shots. One of the funny moments last night, with the fans responding to us on Twitter was I said something about he's not afraid to shoot. I think you wrote that he launched that one from Pewaukee. I mean, it was Curry distance or beyond. And he missed it, but I think it rimmed out. But I said something about, well, he's not afraid to shoot. And somebody from Phoenix hit me on Twitter and said, everyone in Phoenix knows that.
Yeah, you know. So, and the thing is that really long three that he took might have been his best looking three of the night, you know. And it's one of those things where he's not going to do it every game, and you know the Bucks are still kind of coming together as a team and trying to figure out exactly what their identity is. And as much as they preach in training camp, oh, we're going to be a defensive team, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, you know, those things you have to say, and actually executing it and doing it, you know, that's a whole different story. So I think this is a building process, and I don't think, you know, the opening game, even in a loss, as you know, relatively lopsided as it was, in the sense that the Bucks never led, and the Hornets were in total control for most of the game, you know, I don't think it's damning in any way. I think, you know, it would be bad if they followed that up with a, you know, by laying an egg against the Nets on Saturday. But right now, this is, you know, this is the team we're working with. You know, this is the team we're watching this season. This is about what we expected. At least what I expected. You know, was it Giannis was stellar, and you know the rest of the team around him, you know, has to play at a high level in order for them to win games. And last night they didn't.
Well, I thought that was a interesting comment from Coach Kidd after the game, where he said Giannis was off the charts, probably the quote of the night, and he said, you know, he has to get his teammates to join him. So that was kind of a twofold statement, saying Giannis was tremendous, but we really have to have a lot more. I was going to say, when we were talking about Teletovic, let's hope he doesn't have grievous vascular disease, right? You know, I hate to bring that up, but I mean, he's a guy who needs to come in here and shoot the threes and make some threes. That's why they brought him in. But going back to Giannis, I mean, he was spectacular. Thought he scored in the paint and even hit a couple jumpers. And Coach Kidd mentioned that in the post game. He hit one three. He hit one long two. Seemed to be pretty confident. And you just hope that continues for him, because that will be a big step for him if he's hitting some of those. Again, he just has to be confident and make a few of those. Jabari hit a three, I think, as well. So.
And above the break three. It wasn't just a corner three. It was an above the break
three. Not a corner three, above the break. So you got to think their three-point shooting will improve. Jason Terry, let's see, what he have? 0 for 1 from 3. Brogdon was 0 for 2. There was that one three that Brogdon had wide open. Would have cut the lead to 7 in the fourth quarter, and that's when they were making their little run. That could have been a big shot, and he was playing very well at the time. But those are the kind of shots that they're going to have to make. So, you know, interesting. I think the bad part of the game, especially for the Bucks, was in the first half. They're Matt. I mean, they just, as Kidd said after the game, they were getting out-hustled. Cody Zeller, you know, was getting right to the rim. Their interior defense has not been stellar, and that's something they really, I think, we're going to have to watch. You know, Plumlee, Monroe, Henson, you wrote about the three-headed center, and there were some bright moments for a couple of those guys, Henson and Monroe, in the game last night. But again, the interior defense is going to be something they really have to rely on. I thought the other quote from Coach Kidd that was very interesting, he said that Giannis will have to find some time to take his breaks, because he played 40 minutes, and they're going to have him play a lot. But he said it can't be on the defensive end. We need him on the defensive end, and that just shows how much they rely on him and how he's one of their top defensive players as well as offensive players.
Yeah, he's definitely got to go both ways. And, you know, one of the things that when I talked to John Henson and Greg Monroe last night, I asked them about, you know, when you look at Charlotte, they have three very different centers in Roy Hibbert, Cody Zeller, and Spencer Haas. They all do very different things, and they demand different types of defense. And one of the times when the Bucks especially struggled was when Spencer Haas came into the game, and he started playing around the perimeter. So that pulled the center out, that opened up some backdoor cutting lanes, you know, opened up situations where guys were in pick and rolls and in help situations that I don't think that they were totally prepared for. And so that kind of, you know, kind of threw off their spacing and their defense. And in the first quarter alone, I mean, Charlotte had 20 points in the paint, you know, out of their 56 on, you know, 28 for 42 shooting. So, you know, they were dealing with that. And, you know, one of the things Greg Monroe told me, he's like, oh yeah, we have a lot of things we can clean up, especially defensively, as far as pick and roll stuff and the stuff behind the pick and roll on the backside and the help side, you know. But he said, all of that said, it was probably a good thing that they had different kind of players. This is a quote. You know, we got to see a lot of looks that we have on film now and can look at that and work on, on that for different types of scenarios. So, you know, the interior defense wasn't what it needs to be. I think, you know, talking to John Henson too, he recognized that. Monroe mentioned that. And that's a situation where now that they've seen, you know, a little bit more stuff, maybe that's something they can work on. You would expect, you know, I think from an outside or from a fan perspective, you would expect, hey, like, you know who their personnel is before the game. It's something you can work on and prepare for with your scouting reports, which I'm sure they did. But it's one thing to, you know, to prepare for it. Another thing to, you know, go out and face it, especially when, you know, all those guys weren't there last year. So you don't know exactly how they're going to work within the Hornets system and play off each other and all that stuff.
Well, I was really impressed with Roy Hibbert. He was a non-factor for the Lakers last year for the most part. I think I'm right about that. I don't see the Lakers as much, but he certainly 15 points, 9 rebounds. I think I turned to you at one point and I said, well, he looks like Wilt out there. I mean,
you did. You did say that.
That was an exaggeration.
Just a little bit.
But he was playing, you know, he didn't look like a nobody. That's for sure. He was giving the Bucks some trouble. And maybe that goes back to Steve Clifford. Oh. I tend to think, hey, here's a coach that maybe knows how to use this guy and is able to get him to mesh with the Hornets system. And let's watch that carefully, you know, as we go along. And maybe this will be a much better year for Roy Hibbert if he can stay motivated and healthy.
Well, don't forget who else is on that Hornets bench. Patrick Ewing, another Georgetown center, who obviously Roy Hibbert has known for some time being a Georgetown guy himself.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, I'm sure that relationship, you know, I don't know exactly what it is or what it constitutes, but, you know, I could see how that relationship could work well, you know, with Ewing mentoring Hibbert and getting him back to where he was.
Much better environment than he had with the Lakers last year, I'm sure. And
that was just a terrible environment for any basketball player last
right.
year. Let's just be honest and call what it is.
So you could see that right away. You know, before the game, Steve Clifford said, hey, we're just going to try to get Zeller a few minutes. And he winds up playing 14 minutes and he had 15 points. And he went to the foul lines, you know, for 6 free throw attempts. So either that's he's being really aggressive or some problems with the Bucks defense, maybe a combination of both of those things.
So, you know, there were a couple guys in the Bucks who I tweeted last night that, you know, Jabari Parker was ineffective. He just kind of forgettable in terms of his performance, and that doesn't bode well for the Bucks because he's supposed to be one of their top 3 players at the very least. And so, you know, a couple of people said, oh, well, there were more guys that were invisible than just him. You know, and it's true. But, you know, what did you take away from Jabari's season opener? And you, I saw you got to talk to him or be in the scrum with him last night. What did he have to say about his first performance?
Yeah, he definitely was disappointed. You could tell it in the tone of his a voice and just everything. He got in early foul trouble and that was certainly something that maybe hurt his performance. And also he made three early turnovers, and he talked about that. He said, you know, I think I was just trying to do too much. Twice he tried to find Plumlee with pinpoint passes. I think it was hard for him to get those passes in there. And they resulted in turnovers. And he said, maybe I have to be more aggressive, look for my shot first sometimes, and not just be trying to get everyone involved. And Coach Kidd didn't express too much concern. It's one game, and Jabari's been playing very well in the preseason. So I think it was just it was a bad start, and it kind of steamrolled into a bad game.
Yeah, and if you look at just the stats, I mean, it's you can't tell that. I think four of his points came with, you know, less than a minute and a half to go, and that's when he started showing a tenacity and an urgency and an aggressiveness that, you know, probably would have been beneficial for the whole game. I think that was kind of his frustration showing through that, hey, at the end of the game, I'm just going to give it all I've got. You know, I don't care how many fouls I have. You know, we're obviously not going to win this game, but I'm just frustrated. I'm mad. I want to try and do something. And so he did that, and that was, you know, that's positive. You know, you just want to see that for more time. But yeah, you're right. Over the course of the preseason, Jabari was, you know, arguably the star of the team. I mean, I think at least in the games I saw, he stood out.
Played very well, yeah. No question.
You know, but I guess his night, as troubling as it might be, you know, you can kind of see what comes next. Whereas with Miles Plumlee, who started at center and played just 8 minutes, like about 4 or 5 minutes in the first half, 3 or 4 minutes in the second half, and that's it, just to start each half, and then once he came off the court, he was done. There's less to kind of go off of and say what he needs to improve, because the sample size was so small.
Yeah, and it's been a little bit that way during the preseason with Miles, too. This isn't the only time where he's not been productive, or he's had a few minutes where really nothing has happened. And I think it was more glaring in the regular season, and particularly last night. Coach Kidd said he was going to get Monroe in the game early. That was his plan even before the game started.
True.
He told us that in the pregame. And there weren't too many minutes gone, and here was Monroe at the table, because things just weren't clicking for the Bucks early in the game. And again, part of that was those two passes where Jabari was trying to find Miles. They didn't connect. For whatever reason, it wasn't very cohesive. And that might not just be Jabari's fault either. So this was something that they weren't connecting. We've seen in the past, one of the good things was where Giannis and Jabari were playing really well with Miles, and they were connecting and finding each other and getting him for lobs. Or obviously Charlotte had scouted that, and they were aware of that, taking that away. So we'll see. It's one game. Kidd didn't seem to be too concerned about that after one game, but you wrote about it. It will be real interesting. He said, I thought the most interesting thing he said about those centers was he said they've talked to everybody, and he said we're all on the same page. And he obviously talked to them and said, hey, there are some nights where one of the three of you is not going to play that much. That's just the way it will work if somebody's hot or somebody's not. And certainly Monroe came in. He didn't shoot particularly well, but he had 10 rebounds. He had 14 points. He got to the foul line. He was, you know, the most effective of the three setters. I think, as you mentioned, John Henson didn't play too badly in his 10 minutes. Helped out when he came in. That was mostly in the second quarter.
And when you look at each of those three centers and you try and define what they do well, you would probably say that Plumlee plays really well in the pick and roll game with Jabari and Giannis and Dellavedova, and you know he can really, you know, be effective in the pick and roll. You know, you look at John Henson, and he is more of a defensive presence. He can block shots, he can give you energy, he can get rebounds. You know, you look at Greg Monroe, he's very good in the post, or you know, as a post scorer, you know, and he can rebound the ball fairly well. You know, so those are, you know, the their traits. And Plumlee, you know, not just with Jabari, but with other players, just the pick and roll wasn't working. You know, the Hornets, you know, knew it was coming. They knew that that's what they like to do with him. They defended it well. And, you know, at least one of those turnovers from Jabari was because they collapsed on him in a way that made it very difficult for him to pass it out through the traffic to Plumlee as his intended target. You know, that just wasn't going to work out on that given play. And, you know, so the pick and roll game wasn't working. Jason Kidd decided, let's go with Monroe. And, you know, then he obviously needed a break. And since Plumlee wasn't able to do or hadn't shown that, you know, he was able to be effective in the pick and roll game or get rebounds, because in his 8 minutes, he had one rebound. You know, so he said, all right, let me bring Henson in there. We need to maybe get some defense and try and mix it up. And I don't expect that to be the situation on Saturday against the Nets, and maybe it won't be the situation against Detroit or other games going forward, but it seemed like the right moves were made on Wednesday, whether or not they're the moves that are made in other games.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I think it'll be real interesting to see how it goes and how that center rotation you know, there may be some changes back and forth, and Kidd may decide to start Monroe some of the time as well.
Yeah, and Monroe said that depth, like, you know, from the outside, people might think, oh, it's an adjustment. You have to get used to playing different minutes or starting or coming off the bench or whatever. And he said, hey, I feel like it's more of a luxury of having three guys that we can rely on any given night. It just happened to be his turn, you know. And but you look at the plus-minus numbers from Wednesday's game, and Plumlee played 8 minutes, was minus 10. You know, Monroe played 10 minutes, Monroe played 29 minutes and was plus 2. One of, you know, just three guys on the team who was positive in the plus minus, with Jason Terry plus 5 and Michael Beasley plus 2. You know, and then Henson played 10 minutes and it was minus 3. So, you know, two of the centers kept things close in the time that they were there. I mean, that's a one way to measure how effective someone's being. Obviously, it doesn't have everything to do with one player. It depends on who they're on the floor with and what's going on while they're there. But it's one indicator of how things are going.
Sometimes I think, man, it's always worth looking at. You have to take it with a little bit of understanding. But if you look at the starters, Giannis was minus 5. He had the best of the starters. He had the best plus minus. And we all know the starters got in a big hole early in the game. So he was back in there with that otherwise backup unit in the fourth quarter that made a nice run. So, and I guess while we're talking about that, we should talk about Malcolm Brogdon. The rookie played 21 minutes.
Well, I was just going to ask you, who do you think made a better first impression, Malcolm Brogdon or Matthew Dellavedova?
Huh, interesting. I think they both were fairly solid. I think Dellavedova will play even better than he did. He was 5 for 10. He had 11 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, 29 minutes. You know, he had 2 turnovers, but nothing terrible. The Bucks only had 8 turnovers in the game, which was a very good number given some of their turnover woes in the preseason.
And considering how sloppy of a game they played, it wasn't because they were being loose with the ball. They just kind of played a sloppy game.
They took some bad shots.
With bad shots and spacing and defense.
Or they missed some shots. Yeah. But I would rate them about even there and just say they both, you know, had some encouraging moments. Certainly Brogdon he had that dunk and he had the 3 that he missed, but he was right in the middle of it when the Bucks were making that comeback, which has to be encouraging to see that he wasn't overwhelmed by the situation, not in the least. And I wrote a little about him for tomorrow, or you know, it's up on the website now. And that was funny because we asked Kidd before the game, hey, this guy's really going to play some minutes, how will he handle it? And he said, yeah, you know, he's going to be out there. Believe me, he's the backup. So he's going to have to learn on the job, so to speak. And that was very encouraging for a first performance.
Yeah, and if you're watching, you know, on TV, or you're a fan, and you say, hey, you know, obviously Michael Carter Williams brought something specific as a backup point guard. You know, he could, you know, he was long, he could play some defense, he could, you know, score around the rim and you know, get a couple floaters, do whatever. You look at Brogdon and you say, hey, he's filling that same role. You know, he had a nice floater. You know, he could run the court, he could play some defense. You know, he missed a pair of threes, and I think he wishes he had both of them back, because those are pretty good looks.
They were good looks. Yeah.
You know, but that, you know, if you're the Bucks, you look at it and say, hey, would we rather have Brogdon for a couple years at a cheaper salary, or have Carter Williams for this one last year, and then let him go into free agency? I think that they felt comfortable, and last night kind of showed us a little bit why they were comfortable with what Brogdon can do.
Yeah, he'll have some struggles against some quick point guards, and I thought it was a good opening assignment for him, where he had to go against Kemba Walker, because Kemba's quick, he's such a good shooter, and that was just a good player for him to go against. And Kemba, you know, had a good game, as seems like he always does, you know, and hit some big threes. But I like that Brogdon was matched up in that situation against Walker. That's the type of players he's going to go against, even quicker players. And so that will be a real challenge, and I'm sure he's going to have some struggles. But as you said, this is about the future. They think he can be part of the team and a good defender, and we'll see how it goes. But second round pick that has a chance to, he's certainly going to play this season, and we'll see where that leads.
Yeah, and so one last question I had for you, Charles, and then we'll probably wrap this up pretty quick. Were you surprised that Thon Maker didn't play, make his debut?
Not at all. Not at all. I thought that was interesting. Kid got asked about that last night, and he was quite frank in his answer. He just said, look, we got a lot of players there. Thon's learning. He's going to get his chance at some point. I was not surprised at all. I would have been surprised if he had played. The fact is, you know, now these games count. You've got a guy playing behind bigs with John Henson, Monroe, Plumlee. We talked about them earlier. Even Teletovich, who's in there as a 6'9", you know, space the floor forward. No, I'm not surprised at all. And I think eventually he'll get a chance, because, you know, with Coach Kidd, there'll be a time that he just throws him out there. Maybe it'll be Saturday night. Maybe it'll be some other night. But when he does get out there, he's going to want to make the most of it. And I think Thon understands that. He's a kid that gets it pretty much. You know, when we've talked to him, he knows that his chances might be few and far between to begin with. But he'll have chances over the 82-game season. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how he progresses. But as far as game one, what did you think? I suppose you thought about the same thing.
Yeah, basically the same. I think Thon is still kind of in the I'm just happy to be here, like, mode. Like, he's just excited about everything, and, you know, he seems like he enjoys, you know, learning and kind of coming up to speed with the NBA and fits well with the team. And, you know, if he has to, you know, pay his dues a little bit and watch and sit on the bench and, you know, practice hard and, you know, be in that position, then he's cool with that. You know, you just wonder, you know, naturally how guys deal with that when it's January or February, if things haven't changed very much, you know, and that there can be some natural inclinations that they kind of seep in and say, hey, I want to be out there. I'm traveling city to city. I want to do something. I want to contribute. We're not practicing as often or in the same way, you know, but, you know, I still need to keep up my level of intensity, you know, which can be hard. You know, so
what we've learned about Coach Kidd, though, I think that's interesting, is that the moment you least expect it, here he's going to he's going to put Thon in the game and say, okay, remember with Rashad Vaughn, I think he started like one of the first games that he was around.
Didn't Damian Inglis start a game last season?
Yeah.
There you go.
Everybody will get a chance. And I mean, given the investment they have in Thon and 10th overall pick, you know, he's going to get his chance and, it'll be some fun matchup, you know, maybe he'll be in there against Anthony Davis, who scored 50 points. You know, who knows? You know, when we're down in New Orleans next week, but there will be a chance and it will be interesting. But as far as, last night, no, I you know, it's kind of what we said. We weren't really expecting a big shot out of him. And obviously, how did he go deep in the bench? He still used 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 bench players and 5 of them played 10 minutes or more. So you can tell that, he has some options on the bench again.
Yeah, actually, I said that was going to be my last question, but I have one more. Just in terms of, I wanted to look ahead at the schedule. You reminded me by mentioning the Pelicans, because we probably won't have a podcast between now and after the Pelicans game. So just wanted to get your thoughts on these next 3 games for the Bucks. You know, home against Brooklyn on Saturday, then going to Detroit on a back-to-back Sunday, and then heading down to take on Anthony Davis and the Pelicans on Tuesday.
Yeah, these are the next 3 and 4 days starting on Saturday, and certainly some possibly winnable games there. Brooklyn, certainly that's a game the Bucks have to think they should win on Saturday night at home. Then you got Detroit, a very good team, and New Orleans with Anthony Davis, one of the top stars in the NBA. But the Pelicans lost that game, right, Matt? They lost to the Nuggets despite his 50 points, but that should be a real interesting match to see who defends him down there on Tuesday night. You know, he has such an incredible array of talent, can step outside and score, can block shots, steals, everything. So that he's already made some big NBA headlines with that game last night. So yeah, these will be real good tests for a young team, and you know, the Bucks will have a chance to win a couple games here, or see if they can, and maybe get some optimism flowing in the team.
Yeah, and if they're gonna, you know, do well this season in any measure, yeah, they're gonna have to get off to a good start. I mean, they have a somewhat favorable schedule in the sense that they, you know, get Brooklyn. Okay, that's a winnable game. You know, Detroit on the road, that might be tough. Then you get the Pelicans. That's winnable. They're not expected to be a very good team in the Western Conference. You know, then a couple of games later, they have the Kings, who, yeah, sure, they have Boogie, but you know, they're still kind of a questionable team, you know, and then the Pelicans at home and the Grizzlies at home, and the Grizzlies, you know, you could see them anywhere from being a top half of the West team to being one of the bottom teams, just depending on how their injury situation is and how their guys hold together, you know. But getting them at home early, you kind of hope that you can, you know, you can do something there, you know. So it'll just be interesting to see how the Bucks start. They can't get off to, you know, a 1-4 start or something like that. It's just not going to bode well, especially in the first half of the season where they have more home games than in the second half, when it's going to be a little bit more trouble the road.
They want to get off to a good start, and because of all the newcomers, Matt, because of the changes in the team, the loss of Middleton, I know we bring that up all the time, but I was thinking that this morning. I was like, well, Chris is in that game. You know, you can't think like that, but.
Oh, yeah. You know, maybe he's on Batum or Batum's on him, and that frees Giannis up to do some different things. He has to be guarded by somebody else. Yeah, it totally changes everything.
It changes everything, but they just have to forget that and move on and go with the guys they've got. But I agree with you. They need to get off to a semi-decent start here, not get buried in this portion of the schedule.
So you'll be hitting all those games. I won't be there Saturday. I'll be at the big Wisconsin-Nebraska football game.
And, Correct, but you'll be back next week for Indiana and the Kings.
Yep, I'll be back. So we will catch up sometime next week on the podcast, definitely in person on Thursday when the Bucks host the Pacers at the Bradley Center. But for now, we're just grateful for everybody who listened to the entire podcast and made it to the end. Thank you very much for listening as you do each week. For those of you who are joining us for the first time, welcome. And you can find our newest versions of the podcast just about every week at jsonline.com/bucks. You can also subscribe in iTunes or Stitcher. You could also look us up on Audio Boom. There's a lot of places you can find us. There's also the JS Bucks Extra app. So you can basically go anywhere and run into us. And subscribing on iTunes or Stitcher is the easiest way because it'll automatically download and you can listen to us as soon as the podcast comes out. So thank you all for joining, and we will talk to you again next week.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.